it just, I still feel grateful for that. And I got this tattoo. I don't know if you can see it. It says God is greater than the highs and lows. I got that tattoo when I made my first million because I was like, man, I would have never thought, kid coming from India, losing half of his money that his parents gave him, and then being here. I mean, I still looked at that and get goosebumps. And to make the second one was much easier. The second one was like literally a year after the first one, because once you get that, you have the recipe, you have the formula, and you have the mindset. And then it's about multiplying, right? Because if you have a certain percentage return you're getting to make the next one, it's not that, the hardest jump was to make, let's say, if you're making, I don't know, $5,000 a month, right? The hardest jump was to get from making $5,000 a month to make, let's say, 30, 40,000. After that, it becomes easier, in my opinion. So the hardest journey is to get to that six-figure mark first. Once you get there, getting to the seven-figure is hardest. Seven to, later, that I think is much easier process. And I think every person that I know who's ever made multi-millions or more than that says the same thing. That was everywhere. So I surrounded myself with it. And, you brainwash yourself to, train yourself, basically, your mind to look for those things and look for opportunities that'll get you there. So, I mean, I'm a big believer in all of that. I mean, if you believe in quantum theory and quantum entanglement and all of that stuff, everything is interconnected. It's all energy. You just have to tap into it.
Welcome, millionaires and future millionaires. You're listening to the Millionaires Unveiled podcast, a show where you'll hear the stories and interviews of everyday millionaires. We'll unveil their decisions, their strategies, and their portfolio allocation. Now to your host, Jace Mattinson.
Welcome back to another episode of the Millionaires Unveiled podcast. This is episode number 354. Stace, what's going on?
It was a big weekend for Swifties, and while I might not say that I'm a diehard Swiftie, I am very impressed by Taylor Swift's business prowess and think she's a great songwriter, and some interesting news with her boyfriend, Travis Kelce.
As much as the internet was breaking over that album release, which I guess we'll probably get the economics and the data later, but it is something interesting from a financial standpoint to pay attention to. However, her boyfriend, as of right now, we'll see. I feel like these albums keep coming out and she keeps dropping the boyfriends. But at any rate, it just came out that they are negotiating for the podcast New Heights, a multi-million dollar lead sponsor contract, which is really interesting. I was thinking about this the other day. There used to be, and I was talking, I can't remember who it was, but one of our guests, we were talking about off air about how, people kind of pursued careers in acting and movies and all this stuff as, 80s and 90s. And it's not that we don't have movies today, but the democratization of the internet and places like Looped, YouTube and podcasts and things like that have really created mediums for people like, these pro sports athletes and everybody else really to, kind of create their own. And it's kind of turned into a completely different business model. Maybe there are, teenagers who are pursuing the acting route. We just don't see it. Maybe they'll, become bigger later. But I feel like a lot of the teens and people that we see now are, they're crushing it on YouTube or on TikTok or, various other mediums, podcasts, for example, and these kind of micro niches of entertainment are really taking over. So it'd be interesting to see what kind of contract they land. I mean, Joe Rogan, I feel like in a lot of cases set the market when he did his with Spotify not too long ago. But for the rest of us and for their podcasts and many others, the sky's the limit at this point. So it'll be interesting to see how that all plays out.
Yeah, I'm actually launching a new YouTube channel opening children's toys. So
if only, right? So a couple of housekeeping items. Hadn't mentioned this in a while. Had a few people reach out. Actually, I think we had several people reach out. I need to get back to some of them, but hashtag twins. But yeah, we're going to host a little meetup and here in Austin in November. So it's going to be November 8th and 9th. And yeah, if you're interested, send us an email. I've had so many guests over the years want to do this and thought, what's a better place to host than our own home city, which a lot of people love to come and visit. Lots going on that weekend. But if you're interested, send us an email, millionairesunveiled@gmail.com. We'll probably formalize it a little bit. Going to keep it probably pretty small. But yeah, we'd love to have you, especially if you're local. I think we had a couple reach out that are local that'll be there too. This week, we have Amwell, who's net worth $5 million and some change. And yeah, he's a trader. It's kind of a remarkable story. He basically got $10,000 from his parents. He's an immigrant from India and was living in going to college. He got $10K from them, and his parents were like, you know, hey, here, you're probably just gonna lose this. So, and he did. He lost $5,000 of it, and then trying to learn how to trade, and then turned the other $5,000 into an education. I guess the first $5,000 was an education too, but the next $5,000 was really teaching him how to trade. And he went on to work at a firm for a few years, and then the firm got acquired, and he basically went out on his own after that acquisition, and has had a very successful career day trading. And he does talk a little bit about how he does have a nice chunk of his net worth as well in some long-term holds. And so about 70%+ is in some of those stocks that he mentions, and then some real estate as well. But yeah, he day trades for a living to earn income. It's pretty crazy.
Yeah, it was a really interesting interview. And, you know, I feel like most people that I ever talk to who day trade or have tried day trading just lose it all. So it was fun to talk to someone who's been highly successful with it. And what I thought was interesting is he said, if you are a good day trader, it's very boring, meaning it's not this exciting, crazy risks, but it's highly calculated, and it becomes routine just like any other career path.
It's almost like watching paint dry, which sometimes we do for a living too. JK. If you'd like to be on the show, send us an email, millionairesunveiled@gmail.com. Always looking for new great millionaire interviewees. And if you haven't left us a rating or review, please do so. Continues or helps us continue to grow the show, rather, and reach those new guests that we're looking for. In fact, I got to tell you, hopefully we'll make this happen, but finding a truck driver in some of these other professions, and no joke, I ran into one, and turned out to be an Uber driver, one of my Uber drivers, and got in a conversation with him about it, and he's in. So we'll see if we can get him signed up. It's going to be a good one, though. I'm super excited. Had a long Uber drive with him, and had a great conversation. Basically, should just record the podcast in the car, to be honest. But let's get in the interview with Anmol. Anmol, do you want to just give us a little about your background and what you're up to now?
I'm a stock market trader investor and a coach for different hedge fund managers and traders. That's the primary thing that I do amongst other entrepreneurial ventures I'm involved with.
Wow. And we're going to get into this because this is probably the first time I've would you call yourself a professional trader then at this point?
Yeah, I've been doing this for pretty much all my life. On my 14th year of trading now.
Wow. Yeah, and I don't know that we've ever had a professional trader on the show. So we're going to get into your profession, your career, and all this kind of fun stuff and your background. But before we do, what's your net worth today?
My net worth is about to cross a little bit over, I would say the multi-million dollar mark. So I reached the millionaire status when I was in my 20s. Now I'm working towards the next level at the moment.
Nice. Congrats on that. In fact, I think we were talking a little bit before the show, you might be one of the youngest millionaire mentees, if you will, that we've ever had on the show. So congrats on that. And nice. In terms of the multi-millions or getting there, how is that kind of all broken up from an asset allocation standpoint?
Yeah. So I mean, it also depends on how people define millionaire or multi-millionaire. Like if you're talking net worth, then I'm definitely multi-millionaire. But if you're talking like income-wise, then I'm in the millionaire status at the moment. Asset allocation for me, majority of it's in the market, in the stock sector, although I do have real estate as well that I got into. We have some vacation rental properties in India for Airbnbs and purposes of that nature. So I would say the net worth portion of that is real estate and stocks, majority of that. And if you were to break it down, I would say about 70% would be in the stock market, in stocks like Tesla, Amazon, Google, Microsoft, the big names. And then 30-40% of that would be on real estate. And then I trade actively for income.
Wow. So the money that you have essentially in the market, I guess let's back up to some of the early days. I mean, how much did you start with as a trader?
I started with about $10,000. I was in my dorm room, borrowed $10,000 from my dad. He thought it'll be a great lesson for you. Because Indian parents, like, we don't believe in the stock market. I think it's gambling. So they're like, let's just give him that money. It'll be a good learning lesson for him. He's probably going to lose it all. And I pretty much did. I lost half of it that, you know, in like a few months. Until then, I kind of worked my way back up. So $10,000 is what I started with. But that's not the true story because I joined a prop firm. So a prop firm is a company where they give you their money to trade. In exchange, they take a percentage of everything that you make. So I started working my way up that firm, kind of crossing through the levels until at a point that I was trading $10 million of their money. In exchange, they were taking 30% of everything that I made. So that's kind of how I built up the capital working in that company.
Okay, so you started in your dorm room, man. This is amazing. So you're 18 years old-ish in your dorm room. You get $10,000. You lose five of it, but then you started making it back, and then you started with this prop firm. Did you start with that prop firm while you were in college?
Yeah,
or after?
So first year for me was first I started. I lost a thing and a half of that. And then came the year where I was like, I took a course online from this guy, you know, spent like $5,000. It was a prop firm. So joined their course. So you got to go through their training. And then after the training, they give you like a demo account, which is like fake money. And then you work your way up. If you prove yourself, then they give you real money, like $50,000. And then you have set goals. As you keep hitting goals, they keep giving you more and more and more money. And I just kept leveling up in that firm. So about the second year of university is when I started trading for them and just kind of worked my way up. And I used to also write articles for Yahoo Finance and stuff like that. They used to pay me like, I remember $1,500 or something for every two or three articles as a freelancer. So I wrote that. And that's why I tell people, don't trust what you read on Yahoo Finance. It's probably written by a college student like me. So, you know, take that for the grain of salt.
Oh, man, this is awesome. So you're trading, you're doing all these kinds of things in your late teens, early 20s. Did you end up finishing college as well during that time?
Yeah, I graduated with a honors degree, business and management is what was I studied.
Okay, so you graduate and then you're really starting to trade actively. How long did you, I guess, stay with this prop firm?
From 2010 till about 2015. You know, 2015, that company got bought out. So then I had a couple choices. Either I can join the new company that's being bought out or I do something different. So by that time, I've already been trading for them for about, you know, 4 or 5 years. So I'd saved up enough money that I thought, okay, I don't need to give them 30% anymore. I could just kind of go off on my own. And that's what I did in 2015.
Okay. So you really learned kind of the ropes with that company, used a lot of kind of their money to prove yourself. And also, did you gain enough confidence at that point too with yourself that, hey, I can probably just do this. I don't need to give them 30% and I can do it with my own money as well.
Yeah, because around like 2013, 14, that company was, they were bringing in new hires. So the CEO of the company was like, you know, you got great results. Like a lot of people are stuck. So there's like level 1 to level 10 in the company. A lot of people get stuck in the level 3 or 4 and then that's kind of where they stay, they don't progress. So I got through those levels pretty quickly. I got to about level 7 in that company. So the CEO called me and said, hey, we have a bunch of new hires coming in. Why don't you come in and show what you've been doing and help them overcome that hurdle? So that's how I got into coaching traders and investors. Starting with that company, they used to bring new hires. I used to kind of coach them through that. And I used to run a live stream within just for the company where I would trade live and then kind of people would watch and the whole company would, you know, watch. That's how I got into the education game. And in 2015, when I kind of, you know, they got bought out, I said, I'm going to start something on my own. And then we basically took it to a different level with live traders.
Wow, what a remarkable story. So I got to ask, when you're sitting there doing these trades, I mean, is this what we see in the movies where you're sitting there pounding keyboard, you got screens going everywhere? I mean, give our audience who is not maybe as accustomed to what goes on Wall Street, what that actually looks like.
So they definitely glorify it a lot in the movies. It's not exactly like that. In fact, I mean, I tell people, if your adrenaline's pumping, if you're having too much fun trading, you're probably doing it wrong. You're either risking too much. Good trading is actually very boring. Like I tell people all the time, like half the time we're just waiting. Half the time it's not pushing keyboards and buttons. We might even push the button or the keyboard maybe once or twice. And half the time it's just waiting for the right opportunity and waiting for our setup to come in. So we have different criteria we're looking for in a stock. And most of the time we're just waiting, you know, stalking a stock, waiting for the right opportunity. And then we just pounce, we take the trade. And then these days, a lot of things are handled by algorithms. So we have our own custom softwares. All we got to do is just take the trade. And then the software kind of manages a lot of that for us now with AI and different tools that we have. So good trading is very, you know, it's very It's not a, you can't make a movie on it. It's, it won't be a fun movie. It's just the guys just watching, you know, waiting and watching in the movie. And then there's spreadsheets and data. And that's what real trading is. It's very geeky. It's all numbers and spreadsheets and data and coming up with your own statistics. Just like a casino has like a 2% edge. That's what good traders have, is like a little edge in the market. And all we got to do is just keep doing it over and over, and the edge will take care of itself.
And so at this point, I mean, you're in the education game. You started doing some of that at your previous firm, but you also went through these levels pretty quickly. And it sounds like more quickly than the average person. I mean, how much is this a skill that can be taught versus something that, you know, from a sports analogy, that you just have this innate ability to actually do it and execute well and have the patience to as well?
I think just like a sport, if you start early, it's easier, right? Because over the years, we build our own habits. Because trading is not really about the trade or the stock market itself or the economy. It's about your own psychology, right? It's about controlling yourself when you're in the trade, not letting fear or greed take over. So for me, because I started early, I had a blank state. I had no idea about the stock market, no preconceived notions of, none of that. Like completely brand new. So when I was taught by my mentor, brand new, nothing to really worry about. And that was one of the ways I learned. Now, obviously, just like a sport, if you start playing golf at a very early age, when you're like, you know, I don't know, 8 or 9, you've been playing till now, well, you're pretty damn good, right? But if you start playing golf today, it might take you a bit longer, right, to be successful at that game. So it's kind of like a sport. The earlier you start, the better it is. But it is something that can definitely be coached and definitely be trained. But there's a personality types that we've noticed, you know, like some of our clients are ex-pilots. They make for fantastic traders. Why? Very data-oriented checklist, right? No matter how many times they've done it every day, they'll go through the checklist. All right, this is good. This is good. This is good. Boom, let's take the trade. No emotions, just following the process. And when you come to, let's say, an ex-CEO of a company, he's seen success in his life, sold his company. Now he comes to the stock market. He thinks the stock market owes him something. No, it doesn't. Right? It treats everybody the same way, no matter who you are. So I think emotional control is the big thing. I mean, ex-poker players make for great traders. Why? Because know when to hold him, know when to fold him. The concept of risk, right, that we entrepreneurs have, a concept of risk. Whereas if you're coming from a job environment, you don't have the concept of risk, because you're conditioned for somebody else to tell you what to do, right? And growing up, your parents are telling you what to do. Then you go to school, your teacher's telling you what to do. Then you go to college, your professor's telling you what to do. Then you go get a job, your boss is telling you what to do. In entrepreneurship and trading, nobody's going to tell you what to do. Like, you got to tell yourself. That's why I think the personality type is more that people should be focused on. Trading, anybody can learn.
When you started trading, did you know that was an end game for you? Was it something you were seeking after and you really wanted to learn, or just this opportunity your parents gave you a hand at trying when you were young?
Yeah, so when I was in college, you know, there was like societies for everything you wanted to join. Like if you were interested in football, there's a football society. If you're interested in, you know, basketball, there's a basketball society. If you're interested in entrepreneurship, there's an entrepreneur society. There was no such thing as a trading or investing society. So me and a couple guys, we got together. We had no idea about the stock market. We wanted to learn. We're like, why don't we start a trading and investing society? I mean, none of us know anything, but we'll just meet up once a week and we'll talk about the books we read. We'll talk about what we learned in the stock market. Maybe we watch something on TV. And that's how my curiosity was sparked. And then we would just meet once a week and we would just share what each of us learned in our own spare time about the stock market. And that's when I learned, like, this is what I want to do. Like, I kind of knew it very early on. Obviously, it helps to be good at it. Because when I lost the half of my money after $10,000, I didn't feel very good. I thought maybe I should be doing something else. But then my mentor, you know, he was just like, hey, this is how you want to do it. This is what you did wrong. So I was like, okay, if I can learn and do less of what I'm doing wrong and more of what I'm doing well, then I can fix it. And I think I had that mindset of not being emotional and let's just find the right way to do things. So I kind of knew it in my first year that this is what I'm going to be doing.
That's great. And really unique for someone to be so young and really grab onto to what your interest is. How did you find your mentor?
First to go back to your other question, you know, it was because I was an introvert, right? So I still am too, for the most part. So for me, I had to find something that I could do on the computer and I could be good at it and I could make money. So that was the biggest thing. I didn't want to deal with office politics. I didn't want to deal with people. I spent a lot of time, you know, growing up in my dorm room, playing Xbox, working in the computer, researching, learning. So that's why I was like, okay, this is something I have to be good at pretty much. Because, you know, social, you know, whole thing, I mean, I don't really fit in. And that was kind of my thought process, at least back then. So that was kind of one of the things that I knew that, okay, this is something that, you know, I'm going to be doing. I have to pursue this. So yeah, that was one of the things. What was the other question? Sorry.
Oh, how did you find your mentor?
Yeah, online. I took a course. So half of the money that I left over, I took an online course from that company that I was started to work with later. So I joined their course, and that's where I kind of worked my way through their course programs, graduated from their program, started trading for them, and then kind of worked my way up the firm in that levels.
So $5,000, that's about what you had left from the money that your parents gave you. How did you have the guts to spend it all on this course that you hoped would work out?
Because, you know, I lost half of it anyway. So in my mind, I was like, if I keep doing what I'm doing, I'm going to lose it anyway. So might as well give it a shot and, you know, maybe take some education. Because I was like, there's no way I can read a few articles online, push some buttons and make money. So clearly I need to know what I'm doing. And I attended a lot of free webinars. You know, back in the day, we used to have those webinars. I attended a lot of those before I picked my mentor. And the reason I picked them is because a lot of companies online would be like, learn how to make $1 million in 2 minutes, you know, 30 days or some random infomercial for trading or investing. Whereas this guy was doing a webinar. He's talking about psychology. He's talking about losing money. He's talking about all the pitfalls about trading, not the good side, the bad side that is not that glamorous. And that's what made me like, you know what? This guy, if I lose my money trusting him, so be it. But I'm going to lose it in the stock market anyway. Let me give it a shot. And that was kind of the point where I was like, well, hey, you know, let's just take a risk at it. And that's the concept of risk that entrepreneurs, I think, at every journey have.
Stace, name some business partners that have really got it done.
Procter & Gamble.
Ben & Jerry.
Supply and Demand.
Salt and Pepper.
Peanut Butter and Jelly.
What about the perfect partners when it comes to growing your business?
That's Shopify.
That's right. That's you and Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage, all the way to did we just hit a million order stage? Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling shipping supplies or promoting productivity programs, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, up to 36% better compared to the leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less, thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. What I love about Shopify is no matter how big you want to grow, Shopify gives you everything you need to take control and take your business to the next level. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the United States, and Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/unveiled, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/unveiled. Now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. That's shopify.com/unveiled. And thanks again to Shopify for supporting today's episode.
Wow, that's really amazing. And what a great find. I'm glad that mentor worked out for you. We're all benefiting from this great mentor that you had.
He's so my business partner now.
Wow. Okay, yeah, I want to get into that.
When that company got bought out, and I hit him up, I was like, hey, are you joining that new company? He's like, well, I'm not really sure. I don't fit in with the culture, blah, blah. And I was like, why don't we start something off our own? I'm your case study right here. Why don't we use the same model, right, that you used on me and coach other traders and investors? He's like, but, you know, he's an older guy. So he's like, I don't want to deal with any of that online stuff, marketing, blah, blah. I'm like, let me handle that part. Like, I'll handle that, right? And I'll do the business side of things. You just focus on the curriculum creation, exactly the process you used to teach me. And let's take it to other people. And that's why 2015, we started this thing together.
Wow. What a great partnership that turned into. And you really proved yourself to him, it sounds like, as well. So how long after you started trading did you make your first million? And then how long from your first million to your second million?
About five, six years, I think was the number. So the first 2-3 years were just, you know, like first year was losing money. Second year, you're kind of making it, but it's not enough to like really live off. third year is the point where you get to where I got to where I can at least have an income, replace, you know, whatever I need to do, pay my bills. And then training is like a linear thing. Once you get the process down, you can scale. So year five or six, I think, was the point where I finally made my first million. I was like, damn, this is amazing. You know, it just, I still feel grateful for that. And I got this tattoo. I don't know if you can see it. It says God is greater than the highs and lows. I got that tattoo when I made my first million because I was like, man, I would have never thought, you know, kid coming from India, losing half of his money that his parents gave him. And then being here, I mean, you know, I still looked at that and get goosebumps. And to make the second one was much easier. The second one was like literally a year after the first one. Because once you get that, you have the recipe, you have the formula, and you have the mindset. And then it's about multiplying, right? Because if you have a certain percentage return you're getting, to make the next one, it's not that, you know, the hardest jump was to make, let's say, if you're making, I don't know, $5,000 a month, right? The hardest jump was to get from making $5,000 a month to make, let's say, 30, 40,000. After that, it becomes easier, in my opinion. So the hardest journey is to get to that six-figure mark first. Once you get there, getting to the seven-figure is hardest. Seven to, you know, later, that I think is much easier process. And I think every person that I know who's ever made multi-millions or more than that says the same thing. It's just that getting to six figures and getting to a million is the hard part. Then it gets easier after that.
You're giving me some hope. I mean, I'm not going to start day trading, but you're giving me some hope because when I think about day trading, I think about everybody losing their money because everyone I've ever talked to who tried their hand at day trading just lost everything, which is why, you know, I would say the majority of our millionaires that we have on are invested in index funds, mutual funds. But to hear your success, it actually sounds just like every other millionaire when it comes to, hey, hardest to make your first million and then it gets easier and you've got your recipe down. It's just that your trade in particular seems like a mystery to me. And in fact, when I think of it, I actually don't envision you in your room or your office by yourself. I envision you like on Wall Street, like throwing papers all over the place and running around like crazy. But it sounds like that's not what that actually looks like. And I must be stuck in the movies.
Oh, 100%. If you watch me, half the day is just sitting there, you know, with your mouse and keyboard and just waiting for the right opportunity or some alerts we might have set for them to go off. But yeah, to your point, that is kind of the recipe. And day traders, yeah, most of them do lose money. And because the fact that if you don't have your emotional control, stock market's fast. Like things can really get ahead of yourself. So if you're not emotionally strong, what happens? Somebody gets in a trade, the stock is going down. And guess what? They don't get out. They just keep holding. Maybe it'll come back up. Maybe it'll come back up. They buy more. Maybe it'll come back up. That's hope. Hope is not a strategy, right? For me, if I'm losing in a trade, I have a set number in mind. As soon as I hit that loss, I'm out of the trade. Move on to the next one, right? So that discipline is why most people don't make it in trading.
Especially. As you've gone on this trading journey, I mean, is there anything that sticks out to you a period of time? Maybe it was that first million and you got that tattoo that was like really, hey, this is actually sustainable for me for a super long time, or maybe even came before you made that first million. But was there a certain time period or certain trade that really triggered that for you?
It wasn't like a one trade, but I remember like having that conversation when, you know, we were looking at each other's results. So part of the thing with our company is any coach that we get or any trainer we get, every year we do annual audit, like making sure everybody's actually doing what they say they're doing. So when we did that audit and my business partner kind of gave me stats, he's like, dude, you're like, he's in his mid 40s, you know, almost about to be 50. And he's like, dude, you're in your 20s and you made this. And he gave me that stat. He's like, only X percentage of people in America make that. And at your age, it's even lower. It's like 0.005%. That is when I was like, it hit me like, oh, because for the other, when you're grinding, when you're just going, you don't even notice. You're like, yeah, made a million. That sounds amazing. It feels great. But it doesn't hit you until you actually look at the numbers of what the rest of the world is doing and you're like, dude, you're in the 0.00%. That's when it kind of hit me. I was like, oh, wow. You know, that comes with some, you know, not just gratitude, but also like a responsibility not to blow it from here. Like a lot of millionaires actually do when they get success that quickly. They go out to Miami, they have that, you know, have a fun, they buy a car, they buy all that. A few years later, you know, maybe their trading's not going well or nothing's going well and now they blow it. So for me, that was the biggest thing where I was like, I can't blow it. And the best thing to do with that is get some real estate. Now I have asset, right? Worst comes to worst, that building is still going to be worth what it's worth. That properties are still going to be worth what it's worth. And I think I'm protected in case my psychology goes out of the window and I start being bad at trading again. At least I'm set with my properties and my other ventures that I'm involved with. So I think that mindset piece was the biggest thing. I don't know if that answers your question, but.
Yeah, no, that's great. And that's a great transition. When did you start to kind of have that shift of, hey, maybe I need to take some of these chips off the table and start buying that real estate?
My business partner, because, you know, I remember we went to Miami and he had this, and at that time, I'd never been to Florida before, you know, been in New York most of the time, and I just started, you know, making money. So we went to Miami, and he had one of his condos, and it was beautiful. Like, I've never been to a nice place before that, right? Like, I'd never been to an actual, let's say, multimillionaire's house before that. And I saw it, and I was like, this is wow. Like, I was just stunned, and I was like, wow moment. And I asked him, he's like, oh, this is just my vacation house, you know, because he lives in Arizona. So he was like, this is just his vacation house. That's kind of what dawned on me about real estate. I'm like, oh, so you have other properties? And he started talking about it. He's like, yeah, I take percentage of everything I make from my trading. And that, let's say, even if it's 10% a month, automatically goes into a separate account that you don't even look at. So that keeps building, right? 10% every month, that keeps growing. And when you have a substantial amount, you go out and buy a property or something like that. So I basically just following, you know, what kind of he was doing and mimicking the results that he was getting. And that's the good part about it. If you find somebody successful, you model what they're doing and you just replicate that, even at a smaller level, eventually you'll catch up.
But he was investing in properties for himself for a vacation, and you chose a different route and bought some Airbnb. Is that correct?
Yeah. So he did that too. He has a building that he leases to FedEx, and that pays him like a crazy amount of money. So he had that too, but he also had vacation homes and stuff like that. And I think that's when I learned about the net worth concept, which we were talking about earlier, is as you get these properties, your net worth's bigger, and that allows you to take bigger loans, and you could get more property, and you could just keep building as your net worth keeps growing, right? So for example, they take Donald Trump, for example, right? You know, his net worth, he quotes, is $10 billion or something like that. Half of it, he says, his brand is valued by that. But if you can prove that to the bank, this is your net worth, then they will, you know, give the credit in that amount. He can use that credit, buy another property. Now it increases the net worth, and he can repeat that cycle. So that's kind of what I noticed. And I invested because I knew the market in India. I have family there. So we got into the real estate market there by buying properties that now we put on Airbnb and vacation rentals, property management, and that's being run over there in India at the moment.
Nice. So for you, is it that 10% number that in your mind, hey, of what I make from a trading standpoint, 10% is what I'm going to shovel off? You know, I always ask business owners, which I'm looking at you as a business owner, even though it's trading, but you know, what is that number from a mindset standpoint of pulling, you know, chips off the table, putting them into other asset classes that make you feel comfort? Is it the 10% for you, or is it vary by year and how well you do?
Yeah, I change it based on how well I do. If I have an amazing trade, I just crush it one month, then it might be more than 10%, right? But first thing is, you know, first thing, whatever money comes in, you put aside whatever it is for taxes first. That's the first thing. So you put that aside, that's gone. Let's say it's 30, 40% out of the door, right? You're left with, let's say, 60 or 70%. Then you take that and you factor in your living expenses, right? Take a percentage of that left. Usually most people, if they do it correctly, will be left with anywhere between 10 and 25%, right? If they do it correctly. That's the portion you try to invest. So I tell everybody, like, try to 10%. I think everybody can do 10%, right? I think everybody can do 10%. So 10 is like the minimum I think everybody should be doing. But if you can do more, try to stretch it a little bit. Try to do 20. If it's possible, but everybody's different. For me, I keep it at 10% most of the time, unless I just crush it in 1 month, or maybe we sold a property, you know, something happened, then it might be more or less depending on that.
Nice. Has your lifestyle increased at all as you've gone on this journey and been more successful at trading and whatnot?
Yeah, I actually made a video on that for my Instagram the other day. I was talking about how somebody asked me a question, you know, how much money is enough money? I was like, I don't think there's such a thing, because as you make more, your lifestyle goes up with it. So if you rent, let's say if you're renting a property, you're living there, maybe you're living at a $5,000 a month property. But now as you start getting to a better level, guess what can happen? You're going to get a better place. Now your rent will go up. right? And then you got to get a better car. Your expenses do go up, usually, unless you're very, very disciplined. Or like your Warren Buffett, who's still driving or living in the same house or car that he was, you know, in before. Most people in the modern age, your expenses will go up. You will buy some stupid things. You will have some fun. You will travel a lot. Whatever you want to do, you will spend. Your expenses will go up. So that's why I don't think there's a set number, because as you inch up, your lifestyle keeps going up with it. And the lifestyle creep is very real. You know, I will tell you that it's very real. You got to be very conscious of, you know, pulling yourself back in that. But yeah, it definitely.
One thing I want to ask about is, you know, your parents gave you this 10 grand. They thought you were going to, you know, learn a lesson, so to speak, which you did, I guess, many lessons. Was there ever a conversation along that where you said, hey, this is actually the path that I'm going to pursue, and the lesson that I've learned is actually I can make money at this? And I'm just curious of that dialogue with your parents, you know, as you've gone on this journey, and, you know, whether they thought you were nuts or what.
Yeah, I think for the first few years, they were like, man, what are you doing? You should do this, you should do that. I mean, yeah, for sure. But for the most part, I would say my parents were really supportive. They didn't like nag me on anything. They didn't question me on much. They did definitely say, hey, how's that thing going? You know, or if you go to a party and your cousins are like, hey, how's that trading thing you were doing? How's that going? And when you're not making money, you're kind of like, yeah, you know, it's going, it's happening. It's not bad. You know, you're kind of saying that. But I think eventually your results will demonstrate it. Right? I mean, when your lifestyle is getting better, you're living better. You know, when I moved to New York, my apartment, the view had outside the window was a view of a gas station. Right. That was my view. And now I'm here. My Statue of Liberty is right behind me. Freedom Tower is right here. I'm on the 50th floor. So when they automatically see that, then people stop questioning. You know, that's one of the biggest things. You don't have to prove it to anybody. You do it for yourself. But obviously your life will demonstrate that. And then the questions just stop coming.
I'm curious, since you do your trading, you know, personally, you said by yourself, not around a lot of other people, what made you choose to put yourself in New York when you could virtually do this from anywhere, right?
I think it was just a childhood dream, you know, because when I was not in America, the only thing we know about internationally is like New York, you know, like that's the pretty much what we know. There's only New York and there's like California. Nothing else exists outside of that. At least internationally, that's the thing we have. So growing up, there's something about the skyscraper, something about the buildings that I really loved. And my vision board I had in college above my computer desk, I had this vision board. And it would have like skyscrapers, buildings, condos, penthouses, cars. I had all of that stuff there. So I think it was just in my mind that I just made a decision that I want to move to New York. And I just kind of made it happen. Now I'm questioning my choices a little bit. So now I'm looking at other places to move. You know, maybe Austin, Texas looks like a good one. Because for what I pay here, I mean, that could go a lot further over there. So I think now I'm in a boat of maybe getting over New York. But when you're like 18, 19, New York seems like this magical land of opportunity, which it honestly was.
Yeah, that 50th floor there in New York, you probably get the best penthouse possible in Austin, Texas for that.
Yeah, 100%. I looked at Zillow and I couldn't believe my eyes. You know, because here you get like, let's say you get a 2 or 3 bedroom penthouse for that. You're getting a mansion there with like a huge pool, backyard, hills, all of that stuff. So I'm like, okay, maybe it's time for me to move, because again, I'm going to be on my computer anyway. Might as well be there.
If you need us to go scope out any places for you, we do live in Austin. We're happy to house sit. We can check out boats for you, drive them.
I was actually in some of my friends are there, not in Austin, but like close to it, Bastrop. I was there just a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah.
Pretty nice. And yeah, they live on a massive ranch with like so many things. I was like, wow. And what they paid for that, I was just stunned.
Did you make the decision to move to New York when you started trading? And it sounds like you were in university in London at the time. Is that right? When this all started?
Yeah, but even when I was in India, like I just had it in my mind. As I said, like growing up, introvert, didn't feel like I fit in. So I always just wanted to escape. I wanted to start a new beginning. I was like, I'm just going to move to a new country and start fresh. And then that's when the seeds were planted. But I couldn't go to America from India because, you know, I went to London for college. So to go to college in America, you had like SATs and all that kind of tests. And I was just like, I don't want to take any of that. So first I went to London, graduated from there. And then I finally came to America when I had enough money saved. Because, you know, I came the right, the legal right way. I mean, now you can just cross the border like everybody else and just walk. But for me, I had to come in the right way. I mean, I had to put in $1 million in a government-funded project, create employment to be able to come here legally. And, I mean, it was a process. So I think, you know, yeah, now I'm like, I just should have just done what these guys are doing.
Hey, we appreciate the honest path.
So when you're in London, you're in university, you have this on your vision board. I mean, how many years did that sit there before you actually saw that come, you know, come to fruition?
Well, sat there on my vision board from 2009 till 2014. So yeah, five years. But even then, when I came to New York, I didn't come straight here. I was, as I said, I was living in Long Island, in a crappy neighborhood and gas station view. So I would say 2019 is when everything officially kind of like came to a different light for me in terms of moving where I'm living right now. So I think, yeah, so that's a long process, 9-10 years now that I think about it, for the vision board to come to reality. I mean, small pieces started coming together, right? But for the whole vision board to come together, that was like an 8-9 years process.
Pretty remarkable. And this is something I've been kind of interested more and more as I've talked to more and more millionaires that, you know, do vision boards and have these kind of goal setting, you know, intense planning sessions, that some of these things that typically we think of, hey, you put it on there and it's like you accomplish it in a year or two or three, it really takes a decade, in some cases, you know, multiple decades with other things to get there. And this is a prime example of that, you know, for you.
Yeah. As you know, I like to say, like, there's, everything's going to happen in the right time, not your time, but the right time. So right time might be 10 years from now, right time might be 5 years from now. We don't know. Everything will happen in God's time, and it might not be the time that you want it in, but it will happen if you keep it at the top of your mind. And a vision board doesn't need to be you having it printed out and above the desk, although that helps because it's always there. But it could be something on your fridge, sticking it on your fridge. You should look at it every day. Right? Change your wallpaper on your phone. My vision board, I took a picture of that. That was also my wallpaper on my laptop. That was also the wallpaper on my phone. That was everywhere. So I surrounded myself with it. And, you know, you brainwash yourself to, you know, train yourself, basically, your mind to look for those things and look for opportunities that'll get you there. So, I mean, I'm a big believer in all of that. I mean, if you believe in quantum theory and quantum entanglement and all of that stuff, everything is interconnected. It's all energy. You just have to tap into it.
Your discipline is so inspiring in how you are able to consistently work so hard at your goals. At this point, I'm curious, how much of your time is spent day trading versus working on or in your business?
Yeah, so the trading portion is like 9 to 12, basically, Eastern time. So 9 a.m. till 12 p.m. is the trading portion. And then rest of the day would be kind of running the business or creating podcasts or, you know, going on shows like yours or creating content and managing the business side of things. So yeah, trading is 9 to 12, basically.
And where do you see yourself going from here? Do you prefer to spend most of your time, you know, I guess if those hours are consistent, always 9 to 12, Monday through Friday, that, you know, do you like working in the business more? Do you like the trading portion more? And where do you really want to go with it?
I love trading for sure. I think that I'm never going to quit, even as long as I'm able to, even when I'm older, I'm going to do that. Just because it's once you get it, like, it's not a battle like the show on Wall Street. It can get very calm. It could get very quiet when you're actually good at it. So I think trading, I'm definitely always going to do. I love coaching traders. I love coaching, you know, people with that, with their mindset and seeing their success stories. So I think that's also something I would probably do. I enjoy it. I enjoy everything I do. I enjoy the business side of things. It makes me curious. I'm a very competitive person. So I always try to get better at whatever I'm doing. Involved in startup companies as well. So helping them. So, I mean, there's a lot of stuff that I'm doing. Where do I see myself? I think my biggest focus for 2024 is actually my own health. Because for the last few years, you know, I lived the business dream, traveled. You know, I was literally spending 7 months out of the year traveling, like going to different places, 5 months in London, 3 months in Dubai, doing that over and over. That I kind of, last few years, I would say I neglected my health a little bit. So I think this focus 2024 for me is going to be bringing that discipline that I have in my trading and bringing that to my health arena. And because I think without that, you know, nothing else would matter. Because when you get sick, last thing you think about is money, right? You think about your health, and no amount of money can buy that back. So I think that's my focus for this year, is just focusing on my health.
Well, I think you'll do a good job with that if you have even a fraction of the same the same discipline.
Right? Yeah, that's the thing. You know, certain areas you can bring that discipline and doesn't take any effort, and certain areas it takes a different effort. But I'm pretty confident, like, you know, 6 months or 7 months from now, I'm going to be at a very different position.
Do you see yourself investing in any real estate here in the States, or do you prefer to keep it in India?
No, I will definitely invest here. Definitely, it's not going to be New York. I can tell you that. I had a property here, worst state after California, I would say, to own a property in New York. So I owned the property. It was like a 10,000 square feet, you know, amazing property. We bought it. And, you know, the taxes are insane here in New York just to hold the property, right? It was $50,000 a year taxes, property taxes. So even if it's doing nothing, it's sitting there, you still got to pay $50,000 a year. So even if your property goes up in value, $500,000 over the course of, let's say, a few years, but you've been paying $50,000 a year, that there's nothing really left. So I think New York is not somewhere I'm going to own, but I am looking at Texas. I am looking at Florida, basically the red states, right? I'm looking at those kind of as investable opportunities and to bring some of the assets that I have in India and sort of start diversifying.
Awesome. Well, let's wrap up with some rapid fire questions. What's the most expensive pair of shoes that you purchased?
Alexander McQueen.
How much were those?
I don't know the exact number, but it was a few thousand dollars.
All right. Yeah. What's the most expensive meal out that you paid for?
Meal out? My birthday meal we did at, we went to Miami. So that was like $11,000 or something like that.
Nice. You probably had some nice bottle of wine or something with that? Some steaks or what?
A lot of bottles. I stopped drinking after that day, by the way. I don't drink anymore.
Oh, yeah? That was your last sip, huh?
That was my last one.
Oh, wow. That's crazy. Oh, man. I got to ask, too, what is it about going to Miami? I mean, I've been there multiple times, and I know people that do it, and I get the scene and stuff, but it's crazy. I mean, we hear it a lot. Like, it's like, yeah, it's, I mean, got it's the culture and the food. And
when you're single, it's definitely a dangerous place. I mean, my friend, they own modeling agencies there, so you can just imagine if you're single guys, you own a modeling agency, it's going to be a lot of fun. And I think that was when I first started making money. That's what I was telling you about. You got to do stupid things. I think you got to get it out of your system early on. That now, like, I don't care about that. I don't really go out drinking. I don't go out partying. I don't do any of that anymore because it doesn't fulfill me. But I think it's important. When you make that money, yeah, okay, go out, get it out of your system, right? I think that's kind of what I did. And that's what a lot of people do. Get it out of their system.
Yeah. What's the most fun that you've had with money?
Most fun that I've had with money is my being able to basically get my family whatever they want. You know, my nephew, you know, like, he looks up to me. I'm the only male in the family now that he looks up to. So for me, being able to support him, buy him whatever I want, looking at a smile on his face, that's the most happiness I can get.
Okay. What's the craziest thing that you've ever done to earn money?
Craziest thing I've done to earn money? Write articles for Yahoo Finance.
Okay.
I was in my dorm room and it wasn't really even making money trading, but they were like, hey, your article is really good. We'll pay you for it. So
what's the best bucket list experience or trip that you've been on?
Bucket list. I would say Macau. I went to the world's highest bungee jump. That was intense. Yeah. It followed shortly after with skydiving. So it was that was a fun trip.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's a lot of adrenaline all at once.
Yeah.
What still is on your bucket list that you're looking forward to?
I want to go to Peru, Machu Picchu, and do a little hike there. I want to see Eastern Europe. Those parts I've never explored or been. Travel is basically, my bucket list is just filled with travel to places I haven't been. South America is unexplored for me. Eastern Europe's unexplored. Those two probably. Japan, Tokyo, I want to go to Tokyo. That's on my bucket list. Hopefully make that happen next year.
Okay. What was your first job?
That was it. Like, I started training in my dorm room. Haven't had anything else.
Never worked in like your high school years or as a kid?
No.
Okay.
Nothing.
Okay.
Which is why I had to be good at trading, because I'm unemployable. You know, I don't have work experience.
Yeah. What financial habit has changed the most since you became a millionaire?
What financial habits has changed?
Or just the one that's changed the most?
Trust in people. If you're getting into business with somebody, then really making sure, because you got a lot more to lose now, right? When you have nothing, you can get into business with anybody. It doesn't matter. But now I think that's changed. Due diligence, trusting the person, making sure you have the right paperwork. Never trust anybody, you know, have the contracts and all of that stuff. That's the biggest habit that I've learned. And I learned that the hard way by trusting a lot of people early on.
Okay. What's a closely held belief that you once had that you recently changed your mind on?
Well, money related, or it could be anything.
Anything.
Well, like conspiracy theories, right? Like what people thought were conspiracy theories, a lot of them are true now. So I think that is when I thought, oh, that can't be true. That can't be real. But a lot of the stuff turns out it is real. And I think that has been the biggest eye opener for me.
Any last pieces of advice for somebody who's just starting out on their journey?
Yeah, I would say be a person of integrity. Do what you said you're going to do and do it when you said you're going to do it. And that is the foundation element for success. Nothing else matters. If you don't follow through on your own word and you don't honor your own word, you can learn the best strategies in the world, best tactics in the world. You could read thousands of books, listen to millions of podcasts. But if you actually don't do anything, nothing's going to change. So follow through on your word. Be really conscious of the words that you're using and make sure you really mean it. And a lot of times people say, you know, I'm a person of integrity. I'm like, really? When's the last time somebody called you and you said, hey, I'm just in the middle of something. Let me call you back. And you never did. Or you ran into an old friend at an airport or a shopping mall. And he's like, hey, good to see you, buddy. We should totally catch up. And you just never make any attempt to catch up with them. So you're just saying things that you don't really mean. So I think making sure you follow through on your word, do what you said you're going to do. Do it when you said you're going to do it. Build a character of integrity.
Awesome. Where can people find out more about you or get a hold of you?
So best places to connect with me would be Instagram or Twitter. My username on both of those is Delta90. DeltaNinety. Don't ask me why. I had it a long time ago, so kept it the same way. But as far as learning trading, livetraders.com is where you can get started. A lot of the resources are free on there. And then my book, Prepping for Success, is on Amazon, Audible, wherever you listen or read books.
Awesome. That's Animal with a net worth of $1+ million. Thanks for coming on the show today.
Thank you. 5+, but yeah, thanks.
5+. Gotcha, baby.
Thanks for listening to the Millionaires Unveiled podcast with Jace Mattinson. For more stories, investment opportunities, and information, check out our website, millionairesunveiled.com. See you next time when you'll hear from another everyday millionaire.